Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
MJ Simpson, Dave Golder, Dave Bradley, Richard Edwards, Tara Bennett, all legends in their time. The kind of Doctor Who conglomerate of awesome people who've been in charge of SFX magazine, and they're joined by one other, and it's astonishing we've taken so long to welcome this current incarnation of the legend that is editor-in-chief of SFX magazine, Darren Scott. Welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Great to get out with your good self. And Darren, I have to say, what really for me sold the fact that we have to actually invite you on here are two of your rants, two rants in particular, which I thought were very heartfelt and worth it. You might sort of think it would be raves, but no, it's rants. The rant number one, there's really no need to be toxic in fandom. Just enjoy what you enjoy and let other people watch what they want. That was from the current edition, of course, of SFX magazine. Look, I'm holding up the subscriber-only issue there without any sort of cover headlines there with and so on. But even going slightly further back than that, back into the joys of the Titan scenario that you actually have there, another rant that was actually there was, if you don't like a new version of an old show or film, you can always go back and watch the original. Leave people to enjoy what they like. Do you know, Darren, and I'm sure Robin Pierce will agree on this one, we've been saying that for years, really, and it needs to be said, avoid toxic fandom. I could have gone on to say it was your love for ALF that particularly sort of swung me, alien life form, and that was borderline. And then I thought, yeah, the steerage of SFX is in good hands with respect to that. But then when you mentioned Power Pack as well, wow, what can I say? You know, it's just a win-win situation. First question before we go into various other things, how does it feel now you've been editor now, you've taken over from Richard, I think it's two years or something like that. I mean, it's been quite a time. You have been the pandemic editor.
Oh yeah, that's my legacy. I'm like the war doctor. Yeah, it's incredible. It's a job that I never ever thought would become available, let alone that I would get it. So it's been incredible. I'd be very glad to steer out of the pandemic scenario and get back to what I was doing before, because obviously we had the 25th anniversary year, which was completely written off really because we couldn't do anything. So we just had to keep going.
Well, Tara's been flying the flag, as you'd expect, as the SFX editor in the USA and doing all magic things. Richard Edwards, he's back in the latest edition as well, doing a fabulous review of a Star Wars system. And let's not forget this awesome, epic, and rightly epic line that you've done on the new version of Dune, which is coming to us very soon now. And I take it you've been pretty much blown away by the director of Blade Runner 2049 and indeed the director of Arrival and all sorts of things. You're quite a fan of our Canadian friend, Denis Villeneuve.
Well, I saw Dune again for the third time last night. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that I'm a fan of that movie. I think it works.
Third time. And the rest of us still haven't seen it once. I mean, Robin, is there a slight emotion of envy here from the point of view? I mean, obviously, SFX, like the Windmill Theatre, it kept going during the pandemic, still producing physical copies on a monthly basis.
That was not my call. That was not my call. If there was a magazine in print over the past year, I would have been writing for it. We resigned ourselves to being online with a view to coming back this December. It's in the hands of the Norse gods. I pray to Odin that we'll survive. If not, you know.
There's always SFX magazine. In the event of any sort of starburst, people who are lost and looking for that classic magazine, SFX is there. Yes.
Because I've been associated with Starburst now for over 10 years, they might think I'm tainted goods and like, we would not touch him even to spit at him. And who could blame them? By the way, congratulations and kudos on your stand against toxic fandom. It is something that winds me up endlessly, because I am of an age where there weren't many of us when I started. You know, the word geek hadn't even been coined. It was a circus act that bit the head off a chicken. but now that there are so many of us, and we are so vocal, and we have the internet, and we're able to communicate better, it seems that we are turning around and biting our own tail. I mean, I'm constantly frustrated with things like, you know, oh, we didn't like episode so-and-so of Star Wars. We must make a petition because it didn't go the way that we wanted it to. I mean, how ridiculous. I remember before even VHS, the days when you'd have to wait for something to come to your local cinema, perhaps a year after it hit the West End cinemas. And, you know, on TV, they would show our kind of stuff as and when they wanted or didn't. So, you know, it just drives me nuts. And I think it's so important that people who have a soapbox of a magazine, be it Starburst, be it SFX, be it anything, that message of just leave people alone to watch what they like. You don't have to like it if you don't want to, but there are those people who want to. Leave them alone.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
There we are. Darren, share with us in terms of, obviously, let's go back to Dune, because I want to talk about Power Pack and Dune, neither of which Robin has actually seen, so it's going to be an educational process on this basis. I'm shocked with Power Pack. I thought everybody in the 80s was familiar with Power Pack, if only for the Franklin Richards connection. But the vibe about Dune, do you think it, you know, fingers crossed, it will get that second movie? It will be the Lord of the Rings of the third decade of the 21st century?
Well, I think so. I think given the feedback that it's already had before it's released, I think Warner Brothers would be very wrong to do that. But also bear in mind that there is already a series that has been greenlit, an entire series, prequel series, Sisterhood of Dune. I think it's called Sisterhood of Dune. But so that is in that universe, and that's all Denis is involved with that as well. So that's going ahead. So I can't imagine they would do a prequel series for something that they're not going to finish as a film. I do find it very, very odd. We were having this discussion yesterday that one of the complaints about Dune is that people are saying, oh, well, it ends on a cliffhanger. And it's like, well, this has happened quite a lot in films before, you know, and it is called Part One. So, you know, if anyone remembers Kill Bill, there was a second part, and people had to wait a while to see it. So I think that's I think going back to what Robin was saying earlier on about the sort of level of toxicness on the internet. Toxicity, it's a good thing I don't need words for a living, isn't it, really? I think that people just need to say something negative, and I actually think, well, can't you just say, I saw Dune, I absolutely loved it, it blew me away, and I can't wait for a second part. I really don't think that there's ever going to be a place where Warner Brothers say, oh, this film's been absolutely huge, we're not going to make a second part. I think they knew what they were doing, and I think it's to their favour that both Warner Brothers and Denis agreed to do it in two parts, because originally Denis was going to make it all in one go, and he said he's glad he didn't, because it probably would have killed him, which none of us want. So, I think it's deserving of the love that it's receiving, and I can't wait for people to actually see it in the cinema if they can, because that's the other thing now. You're not supposed to say you must see it in the cinema. You're supposed to say you should see it in the cinema if you can. But honestly, Hans Zimmer's score blaring around you, sort of when you're feeling it in you, it's just incredible, epic.
I mean, I was saying with Robin earlier that I'm one of the generation who actually, I mean, I've done academic papers on Dune. I did one for the University of Luton back in the 1990s, which was reevaluating Dune, ecological narrative or theological dystopia. It was quite a line which tripped off the tongue quite easily. I still kind of rework it every so often with my glasses. But in terms of that, I still thought that David Lynch's version is still underrated. I mean, I think there were positives about that, and it worked well. And have you been a Dune fan ever since that first dedication to the current day planetary ecologist by Frank Herbert emerged in the 60s?
You know, I haven't been a fan, as in I consider a hardcore fan, as I would say I am of many things, and my house would reflect that because it's just full of plastic nonsense. But speaking of that, I had the Dune toys when I was a kid. You know, I had the Sting figure and the sandworm, and I wish I still had my sandworm. Wherefore art thou, sandworm? But I've got the series. In this issue of SFX, we do the film, we do the TV series, and we have a celebration of the original Lynch movie. So it's all there. You know, we're not sort of. There's such a big world to explore. I'd love to do more, but
It needs an SFX special just on Dune. You know,
So I'm really looking forward to getting more into sort of especially the later books, which I haven't read yet. But, that's the thing. And it's a good first world problem to have, is that there's just too much good sci-fi and too much, you know, books, films, stage shows now, TV shows. Well, there's just so much going on that it's almost impossible to keep up. But it's a good challenge to have, I feel.
You got Back to the Future, the musical as well. I mean, who would have thought?
I went to see that on Monday. And I was quite surprised. I love theatricals in terms of seeing something that you think can't possibly be realised on stage, and they do it. And I don't care how they do it. I just loved the experience. I'm not going to spoil it for people, but...
But do they have the power of love in there, Darren? That's what we need to know. Is the power of love in there?
Yes, they do. They would have to, wouldn't they?
Well, I was going to say thank the Lord, because that would have been a definite non-starter of my good self. Let's move on to Power Pack. Robin, is it true you've never, ever encountered these Marvel teenage heroes who basically emerged in the 1980s?
Are we talking television? I mean...
Darren, would you like to just sort of talk us through Power Pack? Obviously,
I remember the Power Hour.
No.
Sorry. No.
No. Go for it.
Power Pack was a Marvel, an 80s comic about a group of brothers and sisters who were bequeathed superhero powers by an alien who crash-landed near their beach house. And there was a TV pilot in the early 90s, which didn't get picked up, but it is on YouTube. And we do have, there's a link to it in the new issue of SFX. Plug. And they are going to become part of the MCU, as everything eventually does. I think all of us probably will at some point. We're going to get called up. And I think it ran for about 3 years, maybe about 60. I think it was 60 issues, 62 issues.
Was this in the early 80s?
83, 84, I want to say.
Oh, that was my dark period. Between the ages of, between the years, say, about 1977 and 1986, I really didn't do much with comic books.
Why was that?
It was the Dark Knight Returns that brought me back in, and I've never looked back since.
It was sad, but we've tried to actually help Robin with lots of therapy and indeed Zoomer sessions, Darren, since then. And I think he's managed to realise that
they were my dark years when I succumbed to parental pressure to try and grow up. Then I realised that growing up really wasn't meant for me, and Frank Miller and the Dark Knight dragged me willingly back to the world of comic books. And when I read that graphic novel, it really was like giving an alcoholic a quick drink, and then I could never stop at one. I'm currently actually sorting out around 3,000 comics that I'm packing up and selling to various dealers. So it's become a thing.
But sadly, not one of those collections actually encompasses Power Pack, which indeed, as you say, Darren, over the course of the original series, the children inexplicably changed powers from time to time before reversing back. Alex joined the New Warriors and Future Foundation. Julie joined Excelsior and studied at Avengers Academy. So good from that point of view. And as you also said, a 2005 relaunch comic series was later placed outside of ongoing Marvel continuity. But clearly, Mr. Feige is going to bring that back in various ways.
Yeah, I think that they will be revisited. They will have their time, and they will be celebrated as they should, quite rightly.
Just out of interest, in comparable terms, that was at the same time as we were welcoming to an early version of Midweek Drive, the incarnation, I think it was Tim Hampson, who was connected with the Joys of Marvel UK at that particular time. And you were doing a whole series on Zoids and Transformers and various other things. And he had lots of toys that he brought along to a 24-hour broadcasting marathon. It doesn't seem like 40-odd years ago, but it pretty much was. So there you go. Just goes to show, really. So Power Pack, I think, was involved within that whole sequence. So great stuff there. Of course, there's so much more in SFX. Finally, is it going to be Third Time's the Charm? You run the feature on James Bond, No Time to Die. And do you think it might actually happen this time around? You know, end of September, September the 30th, is it going to take place?
Well, I hope so, because we've gone to print now, so we can't stop it. But Bond is one of those things that it was like a hook would come in and just wick it out at the end of a print run, and we just managed to get it out of the issue before it went to press. So this time we've been assured. We're at that point where people are saying that everything's going to happen now, and I don't quite know how things will change in America, but, you know, they brought Venom. Venom 2 has been brought forward slightly in America, so that's showing signs. But I mean, with Shang-Chi having performed so well, I think hopefully that sets a precedent. And I think Bond is such a huge tentpole that they just can't put it on a streaming service. It has to be a big cinematic release for them. So I really think they are gearing up. I mean, as far as I know, the premiere is happening and people have been invited and it's all going ahead. So it's a strange thing because it feels like such a long time ago when that first happened, and that was the first film that we heard was being pulled. And I obviously share the office with the Total Film team, and we were kind of all a bit stunned, thinking, "Oh, that's not going to happen." And you know, that's a bit of a big thing, but we didn't really consider that everybody else would then do it. So.
In a parallel universe, Darren, in the world of Midweek Drive, when we were sort of thinking we really should invite Taryn to actually take part of it, Robin, I recall that Midweek Drive live piece that we actually did at Drive Time on a Wednesday.
A live piece. You're quite right. And as I was waiting to go on, I got a message on my computer, and that was it. And I remember some spleen venting going on live on air.
It was the start of all sorts of challenges, Darren, because Robin also had to cancel tickets. In fact, the whole event was cancelled to actually meet William Shatner as well. I mean, that would have been another great. But still, we're here, we're alive, and we're on Zoom. That's the important thing. So progress on that. Looking ahead, you mentioned obviously Venom 2. We've got The Eternals. We've got The Matrix, another small Warner Brothers outfit that might be sort of coming through in terms of various other bits and pieces. Do you think we're going to be spoiled for choice over the next few months?
I mean, we're so spoiled for choice. I keep saying it's a problem, but it's a very, very good problem to have, that we are, in terms of print, obviously you have a finite amount of space, and we are struggling to get everything in that. So we're going up in pagination again to accommodate that kind of thing, because this is this constant arrival of big tentpole series, you know, the Foundation's coming to Apple TV, and as you say, Matrix is coming, Spider-Man 3 is coming, and it doesn't really feel like it's just going to be a flash in the pan kind of scenario. And then there'd be a bit quiet. Whereas I think from 25 years ago with SFX, we weren't perhaps as spoilt. And now it's just, you know, every week there's a new 8-part Netflix series, Amazon series. And so long may it continue. I think that's a brilliant position to be in.
And is there ever any temptation for you to actually do a special edition where basically there's yourself, there's Dave Bradley, there's MJ Simpson, there's Dave Golder and Richard Edwards all in one sort of dynamic, universal sort of celebratory SFX mode?
We did a podcast for the 25th anniversary, sort of March, May last year. And that was great fun, because obviously I do feel kind of like I'm sort of standing on the shoulders of giants that have, I mean, I've grown up reading SFX my whole life. So, yeah, it's just, it's incredible to be working alongside these people, because obviously we still, you know, we still talk about stuff all the time. And that is a really good thing for me, because it's one of the very few titles I've worked on where everyone's still part of that family. They're all still really into it. And that's a great thing, that they're all able to still, we're all still able to help each other and things like that. So, and then, you know, Rich still writes for us, Dave still writes
and still
for
does
us.
The midweek drive every so often, you know, he's always there. It's his. Yeah.
They're just good people. Then I mean, I see them out, it's always a really good time when I see them, you know, they're really good fun.
Well, it's fair to say that I think it was Dave Golder actually said the early launch, the very first edition of SFX, when it went there, the launch party, they encountered a certain James Brown, who basically gesticulated in a somewhat vulgar way, and obviously was much more important with his own magazine, a thing called Loaded. What's last of the line, basically? SFX or Loaded? Take that, James Brown.
Well, you know, they do say the geek shall inherit the earth. And what I find very funny now is that so many other magazines are on my turf, so to speak. You know, there's, because these things have become so mainstream and so accepted that now everyone's, what was a sort of like guilty pleasure for us that we would watch privately, you know, now is such a big, big thing that it's on the cover of other mainstream magazines, exactly. Which is...
But- We would be remiss not to mention two of, again, the predecessors, both of which I'm a big fan of in the day. One was Starlog, of course, and the other one, of course, being Starburst magazine, which, so Robin has been connected with solidly. Do you ever cast your eyes over those and sort of think, well, obviously Starlog no longer with us, but Sci-Fi Now, that's also gone. But in terms of that, do you sort of think, well, that's not bad, or is it a case of, no, I can't be tainted?
Yeah, totally. I mean, everyone steals great ideas, don't they? I mean, there's so many things that I did one before. It was based on the biscuit tin from Smash It. So it was just a basic format of questions in a tin. And then I did it in another magazine. And then I think it was Clayton at the time, who was editor of Doctor Who magazine, said that we'd stolen it because they had the TARDIS tin. So but he was joking. But there's so many. There's so many great things that we look back on that we love. I mean, one of the reasons I became a journalist was because of the magazines that I would read as a kid, like Starburst, Starlog, Doctor Who magazine, all of these things. I've got hundreds of them in around the flat. And, you know, I used to love, I think it was Starlog that did the special film magazine. So they would do special ones on Aliens, you know, when they, at the time when they came out and things like that. And they are just a Bible. They're a joy. You know, you rarely get those things now, I feel. I think Titan do some of those things, but it's a different world, because everything's now a franchise and everything's kind of controlled by bigger companies, whereas at the time, you know, the access that they had back in the 80s and even 90s to these kind of films was so much different to what we're doing now, because everybody wants a piece of it and there's only so much time. So yeah, I love all those things. You know, I've got the complete Blake 7 magazines. I have no need for them, but why would I give them away? Like, Robin, I can't bear that you're selling your comics, but I understand that, you know, there's only so much space people can have in a house, isn't there?
Plus, there'll be another room for another 3,000 magazines.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
Robin. Any questions you'd like to put to Darren at this moment in time, as he's settled into the midweek drive seat, basically?
Yeah. How do you find our format here?
Yeah, it's great fun. It's just like talking with people who are not slagging off a new version of He-Man or a new version of Star Wars or whatever.
Do you think, and we had actually, we veered off, as we often do, on a midweek drive show that we did a few weeks ago. And we came up with the notion that optimism is simply not cool these days. Taking simple joy in something just isn't cool. It's far more cool to be negative about everything, and we're robbing ourselves of the simple joy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's always been the way, isn't it? People are far less likely to pay a compliment than they are to criticize something. They're not, you don't really see people going out of the way to say, oh, thank you, that was really lovely, or, you know, I really enjoyed that film, or
Darren, I like your hair.
what's left of it. Thank you.
I just thought I'd shoot out a compliment.
Thank you. But yeah, people go, oh, that's weird. I've not, you know, because they're not used to it. People are so used to, and it's just, I guess it becomes a bit of a herd mentality, doesn't it? People just sort of pile on and they don't think about the other people on the other side of it. You know, if someone's a showrunner or, you know, I'm not saying, oh, the poor showrunners, but when you are doing petitions to get films remade or things like that, and you're hounding people online, you just think, God, you're ruining it. There's no need for that. There's just no need. You just think these people are doing really good jobs of doing these shows. And then they're probably just going to be like, oh God, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I'm just so sick of it. And you can imagine that, you know, I don't want to put words in any particular showrunner's mouths, but people who are
Chris Chibnall, if he's listening, he'll understand. He will understand.
I never said the words, but you know, I know Russell T Davies quite well, and you know, I spoke with Stephen Moffat quite a lot over his time when he was doing Doctor Who and things like that, and you can understand why that would wear someone down. I mean, I would hate it. You'd have to have really thick skin, wouldn't you? But also, you kind of think these people are kind of going, oh, I'm not going to bother doing that anymore. I'm going to go do something else, you know. And it's our loss, I think, in many cases. You know, I think it'd be terrible.
It's gone so mainstream, because I remember when we, as the sci-fi, fantasy, horror, comic book crowd, we used to be so much more courteous. Do you think it's because we've become more mainstream and perhaps it's diluted our appetite? And, you know, those of us who are true, let's use the word geeks, nerds, call us what you will, but you know, we become diluted somehow by having everybody pile on because shows like The Big Bang Theory made us appear cool. Of course, we were always cool.
I don't know. I blame social media for everything, because I'm that kind of age where I just go, oh, it's the internet. And
social media ain't so social.
No, it's not. It's good for me in the sense that I get a lot of information from it, and I get news and I get great trailers and things like that. And I think if you can sort of hone it to be that way, that works for you, that's good. But if you're that kind of person where you're going to pile on when somebody announces that there's a new starship captain or a new doctor, or and your take on that is just going to veer into potential vileness, really, not just a case of saying, oh, well, I didn't like that one, but I like this one. When you're going so far, it's because people have become completely disconnected from these are real people we're talking about, real things. And it's just because everyone's sat on a computer thinking they're hard, and they're not.
And they have the illusion, I suppose, of anonymity.
Yes. Yes.
But we know who you are.
Yeah. But that's, yeah. You know, you're not so big and clever if you're having to hide who you are, really, are you? You know, if you really felt like that, if you could say it to someone's face,
yeah,
you'd still be awful, but I think there'd be less people doing that. And
use your real name.
Yeah, it's such a shame. When I came onto SFX, I just thought I was going to go into this world of, not love, that sounds slightly utopian, but I thought that everyone would just love, will just be into and enjoy everything as much as we always have done. And, you know, yeah. That joy of getting... you know, a Doctor Who bootleg VHS back in the 90s that nobody had seen for 30 years or whatever, you know. And now it's so much of it's taken for granted and dismissed, and sort of the nose is, well, I didn't want that. Well, it's not all about you, you know. There's
I have to say, to be satisfied.
And in terms of subscriber benefits and working through that, if you do subscribe to SFX, and why wouldn't you? You can get free Doctor Who Target novelizations in the current edition. Well worth going through from that point of view. Again, I've been a subscriber since pretty much it started, for those wonderful free sort of lines that you actually get there, or free from cover line scenario. Get both. Get the one with the lines on from the average store, and then, of course, the ones without, which is always great from that point of view. We're approaching October, Halloween, and so on. Robin has already kind of cast his creative ear over the latest James Wan epic from that point of view. I think we'll be sharing that on our movie review program later on. Darren, are you looking forward to, again, another October of shocks and horrific scenarios as we look ahead to the next edition of SFX Magazine?
Well, yes, it's a horror Halloween special next issue, which I should be writing right now, but I'm here talking to you. Yes, so I love horror. I have always loved horror movies. So it's a slight indulgence of mine that I'm doing this because I realise that it's traditionally been a sci-fi magazine. So this 1 month of indulgence, and then it's full on hardcore sci-fi again from November. So yeah, next issue is rammed full of so much horror, TV, comics, films, books. There's so much. It's brilliant. I don't know how I'm going to manage to get a chance to read them.
Robin, frankly, I think it's unmissable, and I'll definitely go with that. And the current edition, of course, with the June-based cover, does have a feature on the music of time, Back to the Future, the musical. Join the West End, hits the West End at 88 miles per hour. Well, it would do. Fantastic. It's great stuff on that system. Finally, Darren, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself, but we've got two critical questions, which are fairly crunch ones. And all your predecessors have successfully managed to negotiate them, but no pressure. You know, it'll all work on that sort of system. We haven't even spoken about Alien Life Form. What was it about ALF in particular that also carried a fondness with you and your other guilty pleasure back in the day? Because that was something else which caught ALF. Who could ever forget that wonderful Alien Life Form?
I mean, to be honest, it's probably the merchandise because I'm such a sucker for it and I always have been. So if I get into a thing, I just go, I've got to have all of that. And I think ALF just played, I mean, I must have been, I don't know, 10, something like that. And it just probably absolutely the right age. I mean, I can see at least two ALFs from my, to the right of me now. So that hasn't changed. I don't know, just ridiculous. Also, it's kind of like a pet, you know, and I've always grown up with pets as well. So.
And more cuddly than Metal Mickey, let's face it. I mean, Metal Mickey never quite sort of managed to sort of cross over. You know, despite Mickey DeLenn's working with Metal Mickey, he wasn't ALF really, was he?
But now that you said that, I want a Metal Mickey as well. I'm so terrible, yeah.
Well, yeah. If IDW have any sort of creative lack that they will, but surely, I mean, inspired by your background, Darren, a narrative which features Baby Yoda and a gremlin has to be on the cards, really. Baby Yoda meets the gremlins. It's got to be.
In awesome a Borg one. Cube, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you know, once Disney buy all of the other franchises, then that's going to happen.
Which still brings us back to those last two questions. First of all, Darren Scott, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the Midweek Drive today? Your debut Zoomer, has it been okay for you?
Yeah, it's been great fun. You've been very gentle with me. Thank you.
Well, we'll bring in the students next time. But is there going to be a next time? That's the next question. Can we prevail upon you? Will you return again in the not-too-distant future to the Midweek Drive and possibly Resonance Rewind? Will you come back with us via the magic of Zoom?
Yeah, of course, whenever you like. All good.
Well, there we are. I think it's thumbs up all around Darren Scott. I always like to say editor-in-chief because I just think it's like sort of the whole notion of the joys of Perry White and various other bits of abuse. So I know it's actually just down as editor. I think editor-in-chief really is the important editor-in-chief of SFX, one of Future Publications' finest. They kept going with physical editions right through the pandemic. Genius.
Sorry, Robin.
We salute you. Take care. And we'll speak again soon. Take care now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Now, it may well be seen as slightly old-fashioned, but actually it's cutting our edge. What am I talking about? Well, of course, the noble art of coin collecting. There does seem to be a resurgence with respect to Generation Z, now following in their parents' and grandparents' footsteps and beginning to actually start off coin collecting. So as we actually celebrate Collect Week, the UK's biggest celebration of coin collecting, we're delighted to actually welcome to the programme to talk about the phenomenal resurgence of this aspect, and the Director of Collector Services at Royal Mint, it's Rebecca Morgan. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Now, one of the key things about coin collecting is, I suppose people were actually saying, oh, you know, give it up, etc. But it does seem as though actually this is becoming very popular according to your surveys.
Yes, I think, you know, I think it's always been very popular, and just our surveys highlighting that it still is. You know, they are over a third of collectors in Britain collect coins, and we know that that's probably stayed through time. We've never seen a dip in the passion of coin collectors, actually, which is exactly why we're running Collect Week next week to celebrate everybody with the dedication and passion for coin collecting.
Now, we've spoken in the past, Rebecca, obviously, about especially minted designs and aspects with respect to that. Does that still create the kind of buzz that it always has?
Absolutely. I mean, coin collecting is personal to each collector. They all collect for different reasons: nostalgia, because they love the design, because of the rarity of the coin. But whenever you bring out a design that is universally, universally loved, then that obviously creates a little bit of a buzz, as does any rare mintage of a coin, whether that's circulating or a commemorative coin. And for us, the story of coins and the history that surrounds them, what they're used for, whose hands they could have passed through, what point in time did they see, brings a whole different facet to coins, and especially historic coins, which is why I think it's still so popular today.
Certainly, they're ahead of stamp collecting and indeed collecting books in terms of general collecting items within that. Is there the same kind of competitiveness in terms of actually getting the full collection of coins together? Or is it just a case of people like to have different denominations? Or is it a case of, as we said, commemorative value alone?
People collect for a number of different reasons. And, you know, when we dedicated to give people a purpose to their collection. So some people just collect a variety of things and they don't care if they don't link together. But a lot of people like to collect, you know, a run of something, as you suggested, or a set of something, or, you know, a coin from every monarch. There's lots of different ways that people like to collect in sets. And I think the collector mentality is quite often to complete a set of something, isn't it? So yes, we absolutely see lots of people and lots of collectors who are dedicated to finishing a set and then maybe moving on to something new.
We're continually told that we're heading towards a cashless society. In that case, presumably the coin collecting aspect will be heading towards its demise as well, or will there always be coins being produced for one form or another?
I think it's less cash rather than cashless, because the Treasury have done some research recently that says that people have no desire to get rid of any of our denominations in cash. And actually, when COVID stopped people using cash for a while, with the nervousness that was around that, there was some sort of public outrage as well. So I think cash will be with us for some time to come. But as we've seen from our historic coin collectors, I think coin collecting will outlive everything, because they'll always be there to mark the moments in time that have been, as well as the ones that are to come.
Is it advisable to collect because you've got a passion, or is this a strategy in terms of looking for an investment, or do you really ideally need both?
I think, you know, our experience, I'm privileged to speak to lots of collectors, and they usually, you know, either collect for love and they don't really care how much they spend on their hobby, or whether it's a long-term investment, or they do have a slight, you know, desire to at least realize the value later down the line. And that will all depend from collector to collector. And you see some people who collect and have, you know very little about the things that they do. And we have some collectors who have spent a lot of time researching and putting a lot more effort into making sure that the things they invest in are, you know, good for the future. So I think there's a mixture generally. You don't need both, but there's generally a mixture.
You mentioned the pandemic, of course, and 58% of folks surveyed have increased their collections over the past 12 months. Is that because actually coin collecting can often be seen as an essentially a solitary activity, or are there indeed lots of social activities that people get engaged with as well?
Oh, they're a very social group, collectors. They love to talk about their collections. I can't really convey to you the passion that our coin collectors have, but we can see that people love to talk about their collections. We've just held some awards as part of Collect Week, 5 categories. We've had over 200 entries into that awards category. And one is the youngest and eldest duo of collectors, which is really fantastic. And you're seeing partners of collectors from, you know, 3 or 4 year old children right up to a 92-year-old grandparent, and they are collecting together. And you'll see lots of forums across the internet where collectors like to talk about their latest accession they've got to their collection. So it really is one of those things that can be solitary, but I think it's very much a social activity as well.
And as far as the Royal Mint is concerned, would you like to talk us through some of the fabulous events that you're engaging with to actually celebrate coin collecting and more during Collect Week?
Absolutely. We took this as an opportunity to really celebrate our collectors. And it's a full week of free online webinars, awards, quizzes, things for kids, seasoned collectors, and everyone in between. So we've got a Mintlings Day on the Saturday, which is a crazy collect challenge, which is online and at the Royal Mint Experience here in Llantrisant. And then there's also a myriad of things for people to explore throughout Collect Week and learn so much about a hobby, even if they're just starting, or in fact, if they've been collecting for a while. There's so much to do. So it would be really fantastic if you're interested in collecting to come along and have a look.
And do you have any collection yourself, Rebecca? I know you're a secret kind of collector of the first release new coins that are coming through. As a case of no, I couldn't possibly.
It's impossible not to collect when you work at the Royal Mint. You know, you work amongst the artists and the craftsmen that make these miniature pieces of art, and it's impossible not to get caught up and really, you know, want to own one for yourself. So yes, I have a small but growing collection, and I actually am one of the people who collects for the love. So mine is all over the place. I've got, you know, the coloured coins for my children, Winnie the Pooh and the Gruffalo, and I've also got some historic items as well that I think are really particularly interesting. And I love to share the stories of those with my dad, who has a lot of nostalgia around the pre-decimal coinage in particular.
Well, halfpennies and farthings and crowns and half crowns and so on, a whole new world, basically.
Absolutely.
Rebecca, it's been fantastic as ever speaking with your good self. Rebecca Morgan, Director of Collector Services at Royal Mint. And a reminder again, if people want to actually find out online details about Collect Week, where should they go to, Rebecca?
They should go to royalmint.com/collectweek.
World Lymphoma Day, or indeed Lymphoma Day. And certainly this is something which you may be blessed and never have any encounter with, the whole notion of lymphoma and areas related to that. But somebody who has and actually been through the whole experience and can share us or share with us his own particular personal experiences of lymphoma and so on, and why it's such a challenging sort of scenario, is Mike, who's currently online with us. Mike, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm very well, and welcome to you from a very, very, very nice Inverness up in the Highlands.
Excellent. Well, it's always nice to actually cross the borders these days from that point of view. So great stuff there. Now, we're here to talk about, obviously, World Lymphoma Day, and in particular, this somewhat pernicious aspect called CTCL, which is cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Could you actually share with the listener pretty much your own experience with respect to lymphoma?
Yeah. First of all, just get some context of lymphoma. Lymphoma actually is the third most common type of cancer in the UK, which will come to a surprise to many people, because a lot of people have never heard of lymphoma. And actually 40 people die per day and are diagnosed per day every year in the UK with lymphoma. So it's a big deal. Oh. And in lymphoma, there are 60 different types and subtypes of lymphoma. There's not just one type. So there's some that are the normal groups where most people fit in. And of course, I was a lucky one, and I was diagnosed with rightly called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. And it's a rather rare, low-grade lymphoma, incurable, but treatable. Every year in the UK, 7 in a million people get diagnosed with it. So I've got a 1 in 140,000 chance of getting diagnosed with it. So I should have done the lottery that year when I was diagnosed. And that year was 1999, way back then, when I presented myself to my GP with a little rash on my back. Nothing more than that. We struggled for a year with every cream under the sun. And then I was referred on to a dermatologist, who then took another 9 months with a few CT scans, 6 biopsies, to eventually find the truth that I had a very rare type of skin lymphoma. Not skin cancer, skin lymphoma. So basically, if you think of a friend or somebody you know who has got psoriasis, everyone knows someone with this psoriasis, think of that, and it's 10 times worse than that. That's what I have.
And in terms of actually working through that, of course, one of the things you mentioned there is that you were, in a sense, lucky because it was diagnosed. But this whole notion of being passed from doctor to doctor, no clear diagnosis, multiple treatments, nothing seeming to calming the situation, it's really something which, you know, again, could be causing no end of challenges, as well as obviously, presumably, personal embarrassment as well.
Very much so. Lymphoma is extremely difficult to diagnose, even for the best consultants. For GPs, they can't diagnose it, but they can see the signs, things like losing weight, feeling tired, lumps and bumps under your arms and your neck and your groin, itching skin is actually one, and drenching sweats at night. So those are sort of key stepping stones to a diagnosis. And a GP needs to take a look at them and then refer you on to the blood specialists, who are normally a haematologist. But when I say see a GP, in this day and age, in this COVID age, it is a very difficult thing to do. Mm. Often it all starts off with a phone call and then another wait and another wait. So yes, it's a very stressful time for people who are trying to be diagnosed. I got diagnosed within a couple of years. And in my type of lymphoma, some people can take 7 years to be diagnosed because it's so rare. But for run-of-the-mill lymphomas, then they can be diagnosed very quickly, but they need to get CT scan, biopsy, to find that truth, and therein lies the challenge. I will say that lymphomas are very treatable, very, very treatable, and unlike solid tumor cancers like lung cancer and kidney cancer and breast cancer, lymphoma is a blood cancer. So it's when our blood cells, our white blood cells, don't do the right thing. They misbehave, let's call it that way, and they start to collect into a group to form a lump, which basically we can call it a tumor, but it's all made up of rogue cells, and that will appear anywhere in the body. I had various lumps and bumps over my body over the years. So then that has to be treated with at times very aggressive treatment. And for me, back in 2013, I had 750 hours of chemotherapy. I then had 45 sessions of radiotherapy. And then into 2014 and 15, I had two donor stem cell transplants, or people will know them as bone marrow transplants. That's the extremes of treatment. Some people don't even have treatment because it can lay semi-dormant for many, many years and doesn't require treatment. It's so complicated.
Again, you raised this sort of issue yourself in terms of obviously managing the condition and working through that process. Do you feel hesitant to use the term, but do you feel as though actually things can be improved with respect to early diagnosis? And would you counsel anybody who's listening to this who might sort of be sort of thinking, they know somebody or they're experiencing it themselves, make sure that you actually do get the right diagnosis and as far as possible, you look to address it as early as possible?
Yeah, totally. I volunteer with a couple of charities, cancer charities in the UK. First one is Macmillan Cancer. And the second one is an actual specific lymphoma charity, Lymphoma Action. And I speak to people day out, day in, online, who are concerned that they have lymphoma. And in the day of Google, we can Google symptoms and get 1,000 answers, but only maybe one or two may be correct. And we have got this tendency to try and Google our answers rather than go to the people who really understand and who know what to look for. So don't waste time. Phone your GP, get an appointment, talk it through, keep a diary of what's going on, a record of your symptoms, present that to your GP and take it from there. The only people that can move it forward is a clinical specialist.
Well, Mike, again, I think you've raised a number of key things today, again, raising that awareness on World Lymphoma Day. Would you like to just share with us once again the best places to go to find out further details and further information, either from a charity point of view or more?
Yeah, I would strongly advise Lymphoma Action. Use Google, put in Lymphoma Action UK, and you will find their website. Their website is packed of very, very good information that deals with how to get diagnosed, what to look out for, what the treatments are, what the types of lymphoma are, and very importantly, how to connect with other people walking the same journey. There is nothing better than talking to others who have got the T-shirt before you.
Mike, again, I think you've proven to be inspirational from that point of view, and it's been an absolute delight connecting with your good self. Keep on keeping on and stay well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
12 million. 12 million Generation X's are apparently in the dark about how much money they will need to retire, with 41% reassessing their retirement priorities, clearly in the wake of the pandemic. Well, as we're in the middle of Pension Awareness Week, Paul, we're delighted to actually welcome a fine soul who might be able to actually provide us with some useful advice to work our way through that. So the pensions expert at Money and Pensions Service, that's the wonderful Angela Kirkwood. How are you, Angela?
I'm good, Alex.
Excellent. So things like a trip to the seaside, having a coffee with friends, gardening, entertaining family and friends at home, these are all things that we might look forward to on our retirement. But will we be able to afford them? This is quite an interesting line in terms of how people are going to cope with retirement, because clearly, like most things in this world, it's not a free ride.
No, Alex, and that's what we hope to generate in Pensions Awareness Week, is to get us all looking at both the pensions we have and looking at how much we are going to need in retirement. And that's not just the basics like food and fuel. It's actually looking at the things you want to do in retirement and taking account of them when you're looking at how much you really need to save. So I guess that's the two sides of the equation that we would like people just taking a bit of time to think about this week, which we know is not at the top of anybody's priority list, but it's quite important to get a handle on where you actually are in your retirement planning, no matter what age you are.
I've used the term COVID casualties to refer to a number of my colleagues who've decided that actually they'd had enough, it was time to actually retire over the last 18 months, and that's in the world of higher education and so on. Is this something which, because of the unexpected nature of the events that we've all been through, that you know, the pension might well have been at the forefront of one's mind, or more a case of that's it, I've had enough, it's time to retire?
Well, probably a bit of both. So everybody's unique and everybody has their own aspirations. So we've got people that we know have been negatively affected, and that possibly means that they need to work longer. On the other side, we've got people who are looking at their position and saying, I want to do it now. So this is about people taking account of their own situation. And at moneyhelper.co.uk, what we do is we give a bit of help and guidance to say, let's look at these two things and see if there's anything you can do to make your aspirations a bit more certain.
Retirement ages continually tend to vary. Certainly, the whole notion of women retiring at 60 has long now gone, and a number of people are having challenges with respect to that, 65, 66, 67, and so on. If people are actually listening to this and they're in their 40s and 50s, what advice would you actually give to them in terms of how they're leading up to their retirement? And obviously, when they want to retire, assuming they don't have the kind of salary that a Premiership footballer actually has.
That would be nice. So what I would say is take this time and go on to something like Money Helper. And we have a programme on there called Couch to Financial Fitness, which takes you through a couple of steps that say, okay, let us do the calculations. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? And it kind of gives you little hints and tips. So the one thing that we would say is this is not about pouring loads more money in your pension. And it's about saying it's never too early and it's never too late to take some simple steps that may help you towards doing the things that you want to do more of when you work less.
I was intrigued to find that more than a quarter of those surveyed said that their retirement pot will likely be smaller due to being furloughed or being made redundant during the pandemic. 27% obviously also saying they'll have to retire later due to the financial impact of COVID-19. This is, again, one of those hidden impacts that clearly has affected society. I mean, were you surprised by the kind of findings you were seeing here?
I don't think we were surprised. We have seen figures starting to come out to say that people have been negatively affected. And it's really, again, we would encourage you to say, don't guess, go and do a little bit of work, which it's very simple to work out where you are now. And to have a look and get a grip on your own figures. So not just general figures, get a grip on your figures and what you want to do.
In addition to obviously going online, presumably there is a free phone number as well that you can use, which is 0800 011 3797, that will also help from that point of view. As you said, is this something people should be afraid of? Because clearly that's also something else that people tend to get a little bit panicky when they start hearing about finances and terms related to that. Is it important to actually feel that fear and do it anyway?
No, it's not important to feel the fear. And this is certainly not becoming, this is not about becoming an expert in pensions, which can put people off. This is just saying, go and work out your own figures. And as I say, if you go to moneyhelper.co.uk, there's some simple non-jargon steps you can take to work out where you are now and what you will need, depending on what you want to do when you retire.
Angela Kirkwood, pensions expert at Money and Pensions Service, many thanks for raising the issue, and hopefully it will help one or two folk at least begin to start thinking about how they can retire, but retire in a little bit of comfort, shall we say, as opposed to retire into the bare necessities.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.